Why did I hit the good, bad, and ugly? That's not what I wanted. Let me try again. Let's do this.
In a world in which movies struggle to find plot,
so much
Al
better.
Adams of The Main Edge breaks it down for you in Pass the Popcorn. Now on Downtown with Rich Kimball.
It's the cold, man. I'm just not thinking right. It's rough. Yes, Alan Adams is with us in studio. Happy Monday, Mr. Adams.
Hello. Well, I mean, and to be fair, I am good, bad, and ugly. So it all works out.
I guess. I mean, you can cover all the bases there. There's no question. How are you?
I'm doing well, thanks. How are you?
I got a cold.
Oh, man. Isn't that the worst? Especially, having a cold at any point is bad. But having a cold in June, that's just the worst.
I think Larry Gagan posted this on social media earlier today. I could paraphrase it, but I want to get it right because he summed it up perfectly from the male perspective here. He put, Rhonda and I both have a cold. The only difference is she's cleaning the kitchen and I'm dying.
Nope, that's accurate.
Yeah.
My lovely bride would concur with that sentiment, I think.
Yeah.
Well, and it's just with... Like, I don't know if you have much of an allergy issue. Like, I'm definitely.
And I thought it was that at first.
The pollen's popping. And so that certainly, I'm sure, isn't helping at all. So, but yeah, no, it's good. Like, had a couple of days off on either side of the weekend. So really it's been a nice sort of stretch back into the office tomorrow morning. But yeah, we've had a good run.
Well, before we talk movies, because I know you were looking forward to it forever, saw some of the pictures. Tell us about the experience being one of the millions, it looked like, down at Fenway Park to see the Savannah Bananas.
Oh, man. I tell you what. I can't stress enough how much fun it is to go to one of these games. Because it's just a circus. Like, in the best possible way, because no matter at what point you are in the process, whether it's, we got there, I don't know, like 3.5 hours before first pitch, and you just wander around because it's like there's stuff everywhere. And it's interesting because the man behind the bananas, Jesse Cole, he's someone who really the dude's a genius. Like, I really believe that. Like, he really has created something that is both familiar and altogether new, which is a really difficult thing to do.
Yeah.
But it's like their whole ethos is fans first, and so like there is like. The players are out there like glad handing with the fans, taking pictures, signing autographs, the whole shebang. There's singing and dancing in the concourse before the game, and then of course during the game, aside from the wonderfully chaotic rules of banana ball, you've got all this mid-inning entertainment, whether it's there was a baby race. You're always jazzed for the baby race.
Whoa.
It's like they basically put out a call over the PA. If you have a baby, bring it down to the field. And so they'll go like between innings, just like babies racing.
Nice.
One of the things that they did at this game that they had also done, in Portland when I saw them there, they play a game called Banana in the Pants, and I don't want to, the rules are pretty complicated, but basically it boils down to the two of the players, a player from the Savannah Bananas and a player from their traveling rivals, the Party Animals, will go to various points in the stadium and hurl a banana toward the field, where there will be someone waiting with pants to catch the banana in the pants. which, it in and of itself, it's like, oh God, this is like, it's like, they're coming in hot. So it's like, oh man, yeah. that probably stings. But I think everybody got a little bit of a jolt when our guys, stood on top of the Green Monster.
Whoa.
And threw bananas.
Wow.
Into pants.
Wow.
And you're watching and the dudes are like, they're standing up there and it's like, oh man, they're literally like, oh. They're a little uneasy because you know, you two steps backward and you're head first on the Lansdowne Street. Like, yeah. It's not like it's, but so just a lot of stuff like that. And, you know, they've got a PA announcer, they've got a hype man, they just do all these wonderful things. Some new for each venue, some are tried and true. You know, and there's also plenty of mid-game antics as well, like choreographed dances and trick plays. I think we saw, like, all told, like, I don't know, 18 or 20 different trick plays, wow. Whether it's, you know, guys going between the legs on fielding grounders in the infield, or saw a couple of catching the ball mid-backflip.
Yeah, oh yeah.
In the it's staggering what these guys do. The Bananas have one guy, Kellogg is his name. He's Canadian, and so his whole bit is he farts around with a hockey stick on the mound, and then like basically flips it up to himself, catches it, and throws in one motion for a pitch. It's just like, it's wild what these guys do. You know, I don't know. Party Animals wound up winning 4-1. The score does not matter.
No,
not in the slightest. It's cool because, you know, the shorthand is, it's like, oh, it's when people don't know what the Savannah Bananas is, you're just like, well, it's the Harlem Globetrotters, but baseball. And that's, I mean, that's good enough for shorthand, but it's so much more than that, simply because it remains a competitive game. Like, everyone's having fun, obviously, and there's all the shenanigans surrounding it. But at its core, like, these are legitimate athletes, and both teams are trying to win. And so, you know, when you add that element, I think that makes all the difference. Yeah. Like, it's not like a cartoon show. Like, it really is very much a baseball game, but, you know, with some added zhuzh to it, whether you're talking about, like, being able to one time a game, you can pick any player on your team and he bats, or my favorite being a fan catches a foul ball, the batter's out. You know, stuff like that. And we did have two foul balls caught for an out during our game. But one of the great things about being at Fenway, well, I mean, there were a number of great things. Like Jesse Cole, who I mentioned, the founder of Banana Ball, he was a bat boy for the Red Sox when he was a kid.
Really?
Yeah. Like, wow. It's like, and he comes out and he's talking about it, and he's like, you know, like he was a bat boy for the Red Sox. His dream was to play for the Boston Red Sox. And, I mean, he didn't get that, but as far as consolation prizes, this is pretty good.
Yeah, not bad.
But that was one of the things, too, where, like, watching these guys, like these are players who, for whatever reason, like, did not, like, follow the traditional path of professional baseball. But you know that all of these guys dreamed of being on a field like
sure.
Fenway.
Yeah.
And to get that opportunity, like, you could tell. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You could tell that it was something really special to them. And it was the experience was rendered all the more special by the special guests, Rich.
Oh?
There were several special guests.
Really?
Several familiar special guests.
Oh, like?
Well, the first one, I had made some guesses as to who these guests might be. But our first guest hitter for the Bananas was Mitch Moreland.
Nice.
Mitch Moreland came out and nice. and took an at bat. And then we got to see, bless his heart, despite the fact that I believe he had some sort of cardiac episode not long ago on the mound for the Bananas. But Bill Lee was there.
Nice.
Which, you know, always nice to see the spaceman.
Oh yeah.
He got lit up a little bit, but, you know, he's 77 years old. What
right.
do you want? And then we saw there was a Johnny Gomes sighting.
Whoa!
Johnny Gomes
nice.
took to the batter's box, and then probably the moment where the place went absolutely bonkers. Who comes in from the bullpen? Jonathan Papelbon.
No.
Yeah.
Nice.
Kilt and all.
No.
Yeah.
That's fantastic.
No, it was great. It was great. And just so, like, they, you know, they're sprinkling in these sort of you know, homages to, you know, to place. And that's sort of the thing that that's something they try to do, I think, is it generally bring in, you know, familiar players with connections to wherever they happen to be playing at the time. And yeah, you just go and you sit and you're just surrounded by all this joy. Like, it's just such a joyful experience. Like, there were probably, I don't know, 12, 15,000 kids in the stadium. you know, and all of them just losing their minds. Like, it's wild. Like, it's one of those things where, like, you don't fully grasp how big of a phenomenon they are with the younger generations until you see, like, how these kids react to that. Like, they could have, you know, they could not have, they wouldn't react any stronger to, you know, I don't know, to Mike Trout or Shohei Ohtani or Mookie Betts. Like, it's just like, these guys are the be all and end all as far as these kids are concerned. And with the added bonus of these guys expressing an appreciation for that adulation, like, before, during, and after the games. Like, it's just, it's really remarkable. And and kudos to the entire Bananas organization, because they clearly do a really good job of finding guys who fit.
Yeah.
You know, there's no one out there who's like, who thinks they're too good for this, or thinks it's, you know, foolish. Like, everybody's invested. Mm. They're all out there doing their ridiculous dances. And honestly, Rich, it really looks like they're having the time of their lives just as much as the people watching. And that sort of enthusiasm, it's infectious. Like, and you can feel it.
And you had great seats, right?
I will never sit in better seats in Fenway Park. I will never. Like, it's like, we were, I don't know, just to the third base side of home plate, like maybe five rows back.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, just, fantastic. I mean, just unbelievable seats. We got very lucky, and we got to sit there and watch this happen. I can't stress enough, if you have the opportunity to see the Savannah Bananas, please take it. Like, it's, no matter how much fun you think it's going to be, it's more fun than that.
And this was a present, right, from Sheridan?
No, we did the ticket lottery. Oh, okay. and we got lucky and managed to land some good ones.
Nice.
It was pretty great.
Well, that's awesome. Glad to hear it. And we'll talk later on in the good, bad, and ugly about the numbers, because they did pretty well.
Oh, man. They sold out the place.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. What about movies? Have you seen any?
I did get one. I did not get to the theater, although the Will Smith and Martin Lawrence aren't missing my money. $100 million for Bad Boys 4.
What you gonna do?
I don't know. When they come for me, I don't know. It's wild. I don't remember the last $100 million opening we had at the box office. It's been a minute. So, but you know what? Whatever gets people back in the theaters, I'm happy for it. However, I did see one movie. It's a movie I've been looking forward to very much.
Did you see The Hitman?
I did see Hitman.
Oh, I did too.
Oh, isn't it good?
I loved it.
Well, like, it's one of those things where, like, I ride so hard for Richard Linklater, the filmmaker, director, who also co-wrote the script alongside Glenn Powell, who stars, based on an article from, I don't know, like 25 years ago from Texas Monthly. Like, that's the basis of the story, which is hilarious. But yeah, the basic gist is, we have this sort of college professor who moonlights as a tech guy for the New Orleans Police Department, basically running sting operations to catch people trying to, like, do murder for hire, like trying to hire people to kill, to off somebody. And then circumstance comes up involving the usual undercover guy. He gets suspended, and so our man Gary, played by Glenn Powell, gets thrust into the job, and turns out to be really good at it. And on we go. But yeah, so the basic deal is, Gary Johnson, that's Glenn Powell, professor of psychology and philosophy at the University of New Orleans, working undercover. He's teamed up with a pair of delightful fellow police officers, played by among others, Retta.
Yeah, who's great.
She's so good. And our guy Jasper, who's our undercover agent, played by Austin Amelia. Apparently, it's never expressly said, but gets suspended for apparently beating up a couple of teenagers. And he goes on at length about how, the comment section agrees with him, which is hysterical. One of many, many, many hilarious moments in this film. So they enlist Gary as sort of a last minute replacement. He goes in and turns out to be really good at it. Like, he has just the comedy. He's been on enough of these sort of operations, so he knows what he needs to say. But he's able to sort of compartmentalize in a way that I don't think any of them really expected. And so he's getting these confessions, these sort of solicitations from people. And, you know, as he goes and he keeps doing it, he starts investing more and more in, like, becoming the hitman that they want.
Right,
or
doing
need.
The research to figure out who their hitman, their ideal hitman would be.
And so you get a lot of wigs and makeup and ridiculous accents. And it's just this wonderfully lunatic sort of thing. But it all kind of gets more complicated when Gary encounters a young woman by the name of Madison, played by Adria Arjona. Who is looking to get rid of her abusive husband. Rather than drawing her in, he advises her to take the money that she was going to pay him and walk away. And you know, he catches a little bit of flack for it from his from his fellow officers, but you know, he's trying to do the right thing. He's trying to be a good guy. But then our girl Madison reaches out to, air quotes, Ron. And then Ron is the hitman that Gary was for her. And they start talking. They start hanging out. Before you know it, they're dating. It turns into a whole thing. But, again, she believes he is a hitman.
Yeah.
Like, she is dating Ron. She is not dating Gary. And yet, Gary continues to, to live his, you know, now three different lives: college professor, undercover operative, and hitman. Like, he's living all three of these lives. And as you might imagine, Rich, eventually that sort of complexity, that catches up to you. And I'm not going to tell you in what respect, but suffice it to say, Gary goes through some stuff.
Yeah, and you know, I'd have loved the movie if they had just stayed with him becoming all these different hitmen. But then when it goes off in this new direction, I should say directions, because it takes you a whole lot of different places. All of a sudden you go from a comedy to it's Double Indemnity, it's Body Heat, and you're down a film noir road. And then, even then, they don't give you the answer you expect.
Right. That's the thing. Like, you think you know how this is going to play out. You know, and it's like, well, and I can't speak for you, but for me, it was like, you know, starting, I don't know, maybe even halfway through the film, it's like, you know, you start to think, oh, okay, I think I know how this is going to go.
Yeah.
And then 10 minutes later, you're like, oh, well, that was wrong. Okay, now I know how it's going to go. 10
nope.
minutes later, nope, no, you don't. And it just keeps rolling like that, but it's seamless. Like, yeah. It's one of those things where it does, a movie that jumps around this much, both in terms of storyline and tone and all that stuff, like, it shouldn't necessarily hold together, but we're talking about a master here. Like,
yeah.
Like Linklater, like, especially with this sort of guy, like, you know, the person who is, you know, whose reach exceeds his grasp, and yet he finds a way to grab what he wants. Like, that's a classic Linklater character. And so, and Glenn Powell, who has worked with Linklater a number of times, the two of them together are just a wonderful team.
Yeah, and it's such a smart script.
Well, that's the thing too. Like, he's a great writer. Glenn Powell, man, look out! Like, that dude is,
yeah, because he has to. He's carrying a big load.
Like, that's the thing. Like, he's so central to this story, and he is, in essence, I mean, he plays a bunch of different sort of characters, but he's kind of two dudes through, you know, three quarters of the movie.
Right.
Like, he has to alternate between, you know, the mild-mannered kind of dorky professor and the suave, smooth, like, confident hitman. And some of the best moments come when there's a little bit of bleed over between those two characters, and you see, like, the other people in their lives sort of register that a little bit.
When did our professor get so hot?
Yeah, right. you know, when we learn that Gary's coworkers, male and female, are both a little enamored of Ron. Like, they're both like, okay, Ron, let's go. Ron can get it. And so you just watch as these puzzle pieces just sort of get clicked together. Like, it was always going to fit, but it's like, I don't know, it's almost like the order that he puts them together in is different, or you know, or it's like he's putting together a puzzle that's of a picture that's not even on the box. Like, it's just, it's so masterful, and it's wonderful to watch Not least because, bless his heart, man, Richard Linklater basically told the studio system to, you know, go pound sand like 25 years ago and hasn't looked back. Like, he's, you know, he, like, this is Netflix. This is a huge Netflix launch that has been, like, they've been working on this for months. Mm-hmm. You know, it had a brief theatrical release. It's done some festivals and whatever. But, like, I was looking, and I had no, like, I hadn't really thought about it, but I looked, and it's like, he made this movie for, like, $9 million.
Sure.
You know what I mean?
Wow.
It's just, like, it's unbelievable. And, you know, and it's so obvious that, like, he went through his one for me, one for them phase, but even those, like, even early on, those movies were, they were still kind of for him.
Mm.
But now it's like, honestly, Rich, this is a one for them movie.
Yeah.
And it's as Linklater as it gets. And it's just like, the dude has figured it out. Mm. But when you're that talented and you're that smart and you're that self-aware and like egoless almost, like he doesn't seem to care about the accolades or the adulation. The dude just wants to make movies that he wants to watch.
And it's such a great throwback movie in a whole lot of ways to movies that had a story and interesting characters who develop over the course of your 90 minutes or so. And man, it's got some, there's some steamy stuff going on there that, you know, I think it's been a while since you've seen that without delving into, you know, softcore porn.
Yeah, like, it was, I mean, it just, like, all aspects of it, the comedy, the you know, the tension, the you know, the more steamy stuff, like, it all works. Mm. Like, and it's all done in a way that, like, look, like, are you going to want to watch this movie like sitting next to your grandma? No. Your grandma's still going to like to watch it though.
Oh yeah.
Do you know
yeah,
what I mean?
Yeah.
It's that sort of movie. And There's like you said, there's something really wonderful about just watching a good quality movie that's not reliant on, you know, having seen 13 other movies or, you know, the fourth or fifth in a series. Like, I mean, you know, it's one of those things where I almost regret not seeing Bad Boys 4, I think it is. because just for the comparison's sake, do you know what I mean? Because it's like, on the one hand, you have this sort of weird franchise affronted by two quote unquote movie stars. And on the other side, you have this nice, compact, well-written, well-made film that I would argue features a bigger movie star than anybody in Bad Boys 4. Cause Glenn Powell is legit.
Oh,
like,
man.
That dude is, he has it.
Yeah.
You know, that X factor. Mm-hmm. And so many guys don't. And like, he's been in a bunch of stuff. He's been around for a while. But I think we all first sort of, I think it clicked in for the masses when he was, I forget the character's name, doesn't matter. Like, he was Iceman 2 in the Top Gun sequel. You know what I mean? Like, he was like the sort of Val Kilmer analog character. And it was just like you, certain people pop on screen, and he really does. But he's also showing already a willingness to sort of poke that balloon a little bit. Like, there's not that sort of inflated sense of self-importance. Like, he's not afraid to look silly, you know, for a laugh. And man, you combine a dude who's that handsome, who's got that much sense of comedic timing, who's got that much acting talent, and who has a sense of humor. Like, I mean, come on, man. Like, he's going places. I mean, he's already gone places, but I mean, like, I wouldn't be shocked if we found out, you know, if he's not the one of the biggest stars in the world in, you know, 2-3 years.
Yeah. I was wondering, as I watched it, it's a weird time of year, but I wonder if this gets any award buzz at all.
You know, that's a great question. I don't know. Like, honestly, like, I mean, and it's I think the timing certainly plays into it. I think it's one of those things where if this movie came out in like November, it would absolutely be in that conversation. You wonder if it maybe gets lost in the shuffle a little bit.
Right.
Because, I mean, we're still 6 months out from, you know, from the sort of the onslaught at the end of the year as far as awards movies are concerned. But I mean, it is,
but it's also Linklater, and he's got fans in the in the Academy.
Yeah,
certainly.
And honestly, like, I mean, I think they'd love to give him something, you know. And is this it? I don't know. It's one of those things where it's like, I don't know. Are they going to try to wait until Merrily We Roll Along comes out? Like the, you know, his what 20 year? No, it's 15 years. I think he's doing the film version of Merrily We Roll Along, filmed over the course of 15 years. So basically doubling Boyhood.
Right.
And it's like, but it comes back to that whole, he always has these questions of male identity and the passage of time and how that impacts our relationship with ourselves and with the people around us. And all that stuff, it all pops up in these movies, and it pops up in movies where you wouldn't expect it. You're Dazed and Confused, yes. And your School of Rocks, you know, like these are movies that are far more like philosophically and thoughtfully, you know, explicit than they have any right to be.
Well, and even this one, it's certainly it's a comedy. There's no doubt about it, but. But, you know, it explores this whole idea of identity and reinventing yourself, becoming the person you would like to be.
Right. They talk about the sort of as if principle.
Yeah.
Where it's like, if you just behave as if you are the person that you're trying to be, and eventually you will become that person. And that idea is kind of illustrated as the movie plays out, because, you know, in many respects, Gary does sort of become Ron, and then you know, in certain moments, Ron very much becomes Gary, to great comedic effect. But yeah, like I really dug this movie. Like I knew I was gonna like it. Like I mean, all the pieces were there, but you know, you start seeing the reviews and the raves, and it's like, and you know, like 97% on Rotten Tomatoes last I looked. It's like, oh, okay, so people really like this movie. And I sat down and I loved it.
Yep, me too.
Yeah, it's not my favorite Linklater, because that's probably always going to be Dazed and Confused. I mean, it's top tier, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, hasn't lost a thing. Thanks, Alan.
Hey, my pleasure.
It's a 5:44 here on Downtown. We'll take a break.